This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly brought to you by Casio Electronic Music Instruments.
You know, many parents can't afford the upfront investment or don't want to invest when students are just beginning. And I would hate to think that people will turn piano students down if they don't get an acoustic piano upfront. I just think it's, we're missing out on so many opportunities to engage and motivate and inspire that child in music. So let's work with the parents. And I think there are some options out there that can really work.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
G'day everyone, and welcome back to Series 1 2018 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. You're listening to episode number 5 in Series 1, and if you're one of my Inner Circle Piano Teaching community members, a very special welcome to you. My name is Tim Topham, your host for the show, and if this is your first time here, then thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoy the conversation and discussions that we're having, and tell all your piano teaching friends about it. For those of you who have been listening for a while, thanks again for choosing to spend time with me. I do not take for granted that you're busy people and have lots of other things you could be listening to, so thanks again. The Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is the place where you can get weekly inspiration, ideas, business, and teaching strategies to help support your teaching and grow your studio. A full transcript and today's show notes and links are available now at timtopham.com/episode121. So today's episode is a little bit of a different one. I actually found an article recently online. It was actually published in 2014, and it's a little bit controversial in my mind. And so I wanted to actually talk through some of my thinking about the ideas presented in the article and how that can potentially impact the kind of advice that we give our own students. So let me tell you about the article. It was featured in The Guardian, which is a UK paper, and the title is this: Future of Piano Playing in UK is in Peril, Veteran Teacher Warns. And the subheading is Dame Fanny Waterman Blames Popularity of Keyboards for UK Failing to Produce Performers Who Can Compete Internationally. Now, I wasn't actually familiar with Dame Fanny Waterman, so I did some research, and she certainly has an amazing background. She is now 98 as of recording this, and she actually started the Leeds International Piano Competition and only recently retired from organising that as artistic director and head of the jury. So she's obviously got a huge amount of experience. She's learned with some of the greats and has been in the industry for a very long time. However, that all said, I have to say that I strongly disagree with the whole article, and perhaps if you know my thinking on a lot of these things, you'll probably be able to guess that that would be my case. But let me talk you through some of the things that are said in the article and my thoughts on them. So I'll just read from the beginning and cut into little sections as we go. So, world-renowned music teacher Dame Fanny Waterman fears for the future of piano playing in Britain because she says it is failing to produce performers who can compete internationally. She blames the popularity of electric keyboards and children starting to learn the piano at a later age in the UK than other parts of the world. Waterman, who's now 98, spoke to The Observer after announcing last week that she would stand down as chairman and artistic director of the Leeds International Piano Competition. She says, quote, "The future of the piano is the cause of great worry for all of us who love it," she said. "First, lots of children are learning it from an electric piano. A waste of time because you don't get the speed of key descent and you don't get the different sounds. Electric keyboards are big business," she says, "liking them to playing the violin but studying the guitar. Different sound altogether." I don't quite get that reference. "Another problem was that many British children were not starting to learn the piano until age 7 or 8, which she said was too late. She pointed to the Far East, where children are capable of amazing performances aged just 4. So that's pretty much the main arguments in the article. So we've got a couple of things to consider here. One is the idea that the success of music education should be judged on piano competitions. Secondly, that the issue with children either starting to learn too late or learning on digital keyboards is having a big negative influence. So let's just take two of those two things firstly up. So first up, the idea of competitions. Now, look, I have never been a strong advocate of competitions being a really positive thing for students. Now, maybe this is because my teaching is, as many of you will know, much more about trying to develop lifelong student learners who really want to engage in music and create their own songs and explore and be able to sit down at the piano and play anything and accompany themselves singing and play in bands and things like that. That's what I'm all about. So when it comes to competitions and the idea of people playing at this incredibly high level, which I can only admire. Like these people that do these competitions are phenomenal. I cannot believe the kinds of things they can play. It's like Superman. But you know, to judge the success of music education and particularly piano education on whether people are winning competitions, I think is just getting things all the wrong way around. Now, I understand Fanny Waterman she created the Leeds International Piano Competition. So she's obviously, that's her way of teaching. And I would imagine that her teaching, although I don't know, so I may be completely wrong, but I would imagine, given what I've read about who she's been taught by and when she was learning, that she probably had a very traditional way of teaching. It would have been very much about getting things perfect, playing at incredibly high level, and interpreting the works of the great masters. And that's fine. You know, that there's plenty of teachers who do that, and I've got nothing against that. I don't personally like doing it myself. I think there's much more to music than that. But you know, that's what some teachers do. Interestingly enough, later on in the article, the Professor Jonathan Freeman Atwood, who's principal of the Royal Academy of Music, is asked some questions about this and is far more optimistic, of course. He says too that competitions, quote, competitions are not everyone's cup of tea. Of course, I'd love to see a British winner of Leeds, but I don't think enrolment in a competition is necessarily an accurate gauge of what talent is or isn't out there. And I thought that was a really great comment from someone in his position at the Royal Academy. Now, I'm not sure if Professor Freeman Atwood is still principal of the Royal Academy of Music, but I did think that that was a great sentiment to have up front. So I guess that's the first thing I'd say before we start talking about actually digital pianos and things like that. I would just be saying that, you know, competitions can be great, but they can also be, from my not my experience, because I haven't actually participated in one, but my understanding from hearing about other people going through the experience of competitions, they can be quite destructive in actual fact, and you know, can really cripple people's belief in themselves and performance skills and things like that, because the talent level is just so high. To even participate in a competition, you have to just be an absolute superstar at being able to play these incredibly difficult works, and they just seem to get harder and harder and faster every time. It becomes, you know, something of just a challenge to see who can play the fastest and most difficult repertoire, regardless if it's music that people actually like or want to listen to. So that's my thinking on competitions. And look, you may well strongly disagree. I'm sure there are competitions out there, smaller ones that perhaps are great and a good supports for students and encourages them and those kinds of things. But these top level ones, I do question the merits of sometimes. Interestingly enough, we were talking to Kevin Olsen earlier this season, and he was talking about the great impact that composing competitions have and certainly had on him. And so I think that's quite different. And to put students' compositions into composition competitions can be a great way for them to get word out about what they're up to and things like that. I think the performance competition side of things is, though, quite different. Okay, so let's talk about digital pianos. Now, again, if you've read any of my articles, you will know that I'm quite a fan of the technology that's now emerging in digital and hybrid pianos. So I wonder whether in writing this article, whether Fanny Waterman actually knows what's out there these days. Certainly, $500 or less digital keyboards are terrible, and I would never encourage people to use them for any kind of work other than, you know, digital recording and things like that on a computer where they're just entering notes in. However, that's just a very small subset of the market. And in fact, I wrote a blog post in early February about how to choose the best digital piano for your students, because the reality is parents are going to be asking about it, because the upfront investment required in an acoustic piano and the ongoing maintenance costs and the costs to move and tune and all those kinds of things, they really do stack up. And given how equal the playing field is rapidly becoming between acoustic and digital touch and sound, it makes a lot of sense for teachers to be sharing some digital suggestions with their parents. And so there's really four levels of digital pianos in my view. And this is from the ones you would never recommend to the best ones, digital, before you head to acoustic. And this is my order anyway. We've got keyboards first up. Keyboards are, you know, thin, plasticky keys, no weight in the keys, often not a full-size keyboard, so they might just be 4 or 5 octaves. They generally have speakers on the front panel and 1,000 buttons. They look like an airplane cockpit. That's a keyboard. Great fun for kids as a second instrument, a side instrument, because yes, you can get great sounds and beats and backing tracks and things light up and, you know, fantastic fun. And I was inspired when I have had keyboards before as a child. I remember them well. But, you know, they are not something that is suitable for piano instruction and practice, in my opinion. Moving up from that, we get to something called a stage piano. Now, a stage piano is basically a digital piano, generally with weighted keys, but not always, that is designed for, as you can tell, playing on a stage. So they're designed for touring and traveling musicians. So these are keyboards that are generally put on some kind of portable stand, and they don't have amplifiers and speakers in them generally, because they are normally wired up to some kind of PA system. So they're called stage pianos. I also don't recommend them because, again, they're not designed as a sort of piano with a case and a stand and all those kinds of things. And also, not having amplification in it can be a bit of a pain, because parents would then have to go and buy an amplifier or powered speakers to be able to hear what's coming out of it. Then moving up to digital pianos, this is where I start recommending instruments, and I'll tell you a few more a little bit later on that I actually recommend, and you can certainly read about it in this article on my blog. Digital pianos I class as full-size keyboards or full-size pianos with fully weighted keys. They will generally have some kind of speaker and amplification system inside them, and they come with hard wood stands and 3 pedals, generally 3 pedals attached to the stand. And they're the ways that I determine what I call the base model of a digital piano. If it looks like a piano in a cabinet at the right height with a bench and 3 pedals, and it's not on a flimsy cross brace stand, I'm sure you can picture those ones, they're kind of X-shaped, that's a digital piano, and that's the start of where we should be encouraging parents to look. And there's obviously good and bad digital pianos as well, and I'll get to that in just a moment. And then the final level of the digitals is hybrid pianos, and I've talked about that before. I've reviewed 2 hybrid pianos in 2017, the Casio Grand Hybrid, which I use still today, and also the Yamaha, one of the new Yamaha upright hybrid pianos. And, you know, there are some great options there for parents and teachers. And the main issue, I guess, and the reason I don't tend to recommend hybrids is that they tend to be quite expensive. And it's great to have Casio's Grand Hybrid released in the last couple of years, because they've actually entered the market at a pretty good price point that is achievable, certainly for piano studio owners, so teachers, at about the $5,000 to $7,000 mark. But at that kind of range, I think for most parents, it's still a pretty expensive instrument. And so looking at some digital pianos that you can get for around $1,000 to $2,000, I think is the way to go. Now, a quick word from our sponsor, Casio Electronic Music Instruments.
As many of you will know, if you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time, I've been trialing out the Selviano Grand Hybrid Piano in my studio, and it's now become my main teaching and my own practicing instrument, and I've got to say that I'm thoroughly enjoying using it. Of course, many of you will know the benefits of a hybrid piano, including things like the recording functions you've got, the choice of different sounds, the fact that students or yourself, you can wear headphones while you're using it, you don't need to pay removalists to move it around your studio or house, and the fact that it never needs tuning and obviously limited maintenance. So they're all fantastic, but how does it actually sound and feel to play? Well, pretty amazing. And I'm not a concert pianist. So to me, this is absolutely as good as a full length, normal acoustic grand piano. And it does have all the wooden keys and the normal mechanism you'd expect. So what I would really recommend you do is head to soundtechnology.com.au to find out where your local stockists of this instrument are, and go and test one out today. I really believe that you'll find not only is it a fantastic instrument, but it's also at a price point that really sets it apart from its competitors.
So I'll come back to some of my suggestions actually about digital pianos in a moment, but just back to the article, it says here about Fanny Waterman again. When giving masterclasses to young pianists across Britain, she found that they often lacked a grounding in the instrument's complexities. Nowadays, it's quick or slow, loud or soft. They haven't been taught the subtleties you can bring out of the piano. Few teachers in Britain had taught that, she said. Now, I think there's a couple of things going on here. When it comes to digital instruments, the good digitals that I would recommend that are at least $1,000 and have the full action, weighted keys, three pedals, proper stand, all those kinds of things, are pretty good now at bringing out different touches, repeating notes at the right level and speed. The pedaling is incredibly authentic now. The computing power that's gone into making digital pedaling sound just as good as acoustic is quite phenomenal. So these kinds of things, I think, are now fully available in digital instruments, and it'll just be up to the teachers to make sure that these things are being taught. Of course, just because you have a really nice acoustic piano doesn't mean a teacher is going to teach some of these subtleties that you can get. So I don't think it's so much about the instrument as for the teaching. Later on, she says, to become a good player and especially a great artist, she believes, also requires parents who are motivated, inspiring their children to practice, making sure they're not on the phone. And many great performers had parents with vision, she said. Quote, you can't just expect young people to go in and practice, end quote. And here, this is where I 100% agree. And I cannot wait to start sharing with you next week's episode and the following three. We've got a series on motivation with Samantha Coates. And one of the episodes is devoted to parents and the impact and the importance of us as teachers, including parents, in the motivation mix. So stay tuned for that. We'll be talking a little bit more about that later. So on to one of the last points before I share some of my suggestions when it comes to digital pianos for you. One of the other points that she made was the fact that she feels that students are starting to learn an instrument too late. And she counted ages 7 and 8 as too late, wanting to have students playing at 3 or 4, I believe. Now, look, I started piano aged 8, and I'm now a lifelong pianist, and you know, I've dedicated my life to it and improving piano education around the world as much as I can. So I don't see an issue with starting at age 7 or 8. In fact, I think age 7 or 8, that's when I start teaching students, and that's what I love. I know many teachers will teach preschool ages down to sort of 4 and 5, and that's great. Not my thing, but I'm sure you can have great impact at that lower level. However, I don't think that should be cause for concern or worry. There are certainly students I have taken on who have started learning at 12 or 13. And look, while I may not be able to play a Rachmaninoff prelude or a Beethoven sonata at an international competition, wow, they're composing music and they're singing in bands and they're playing in their school jazz band and they're having a great time. And to me, that's far more important, of course, than winning an international piano competition. So I think it comes right back to the beginning where we were talking about the fact that the article is really basing the success of music education on the ability of students to win competitions. And I just can't agree with that premise. So let me give you a couple of suggestions. If you haven't read my article about digital pianos, let me just tell you a few things to look out for. Firstly, just a couple of reasons why I think these highly recommended over acoustic pianos. And look, by the way, if a student has an acoustic piano and it's not 100 years old and it's in tune and it works, then great. Obviously, that's fine. And I'm not against acoustic pianos. I love playing good acoustic pianos. The reason I mention this is because, many parents can't afford the upfront investment or don't want to invest when students are just beginning. And I would hate to think that people will turn piano students down if they don't get an acoustic piano upfront. I just think it's, we're missing out on so many opportunities to engage and motivate and inspire that child in music. So let's work with the parents. And I think there are some options out there that can really work. So why do I recommend digital pianos for parents? Well, the upfront investment is obviously much smaller. As I'll explain in just a moment, you can get things for even under $1,000, certainly up to about $2,000-$2,500 that are fantastic. Ongoing maintenance costs are basically nil. Any removals costs are nil because they can be carried around the house by a couple of people. The touch and sound is improving every year, and the differences between acoustics and digitals is rapidly becoming almost imperceptible at the higher levels. And of course, one of the other big advantages for digital piano use in the homes for students is that they can use headphones. And yes, you can get silent pianos from companies like Yamaha, but again, they're more expensive than many parents wish to spend. So having the option to play with headphones, of course, gives families much more flexibility when it comes to practice time, particularly if there's multiple students having to practice and other children in the house doing homework and mum or dad cooking. You know, all of these things can get very, very busy and loud in a house. So to enable the instrument to be in the main room of the house and not in a student's bedroom and have them practice sometimes with headphones can be a great option. So they're just a few reasons why I think that recommending digital pianos can be a great way to go for teachers. So what are some of my recommendations? Well, if you're familiar with some of the writing that I've done before, you'll know that I do like the Roland FP series. The Roland FP30 is a new instrument. The action is fantastic. You can get them for about $650 plus an extra $100, so let's say $750 with a stand. So add an adjustable bench to that, perhaps we're at about $850. We're under a grand, and we have a full-size, weighted, excellent action, good sound digital piano with a proper case and three pedals, and looking really good. And the Roland I use as my second keyboard in the piano studio today. Yamaha has the P115, which is probably one of the least expensive pianos. It's probably at the lower end. I wouldn't recommend it if parents have a little bit more money to spend. It's about $600. I think you can get a lot more bang for your buck for a little bit more. The Kawai ES series, ES for Sam, they are great. 88 key digital pianos with speakers and stand. I started my teaching studio with an ES series. They're about $750 to $1,000, depending on the model you get. I think they are great. And also the Yamaha YDP-103R. That comes with a stand and three pedals as standard for under $1,000. So the YDP series is great. And I will just mention one other, and that's the Kawai CA series, as they are built with full wooden keys. Which is and is beautiful to play and sounds great, looks like a full piano with the proper cabinetry and all that kind of stuff. They're a little bit more expensive, but I think they're a good bridge between digitals and hybrid pianos. So a great way there to if parents have just a little bit more money to spend, but don't have quite the money for a hybrid, then look at the Kawai CA series. I think they're great. So there you go. There's a few of my thoughts that came up as a result of reading this article. And you can find that article on The Guardian or just by searching probably Future of Piano Playing in UK is in Peril. We'll also put a link in the show notes for today's episode. Go and have a read and see what you think. I always like to be challenged when it comes to the kinds of information that I put out on the blog and the podcast. So if this has really annoyed you and you are completely against everything I've I've said, then jump onto those show notes and leave a comment or leave a comment on social wherever you see this posted. It would be great to have a conversation about it. Perhaps I'm way off the mark. Those show notes again are at timtopham.com/episode121. So just a few reminders about what's coming up in the coming week. I'm very, very excited that I'll be in Orlando, of course, next weekend for the MTNA event. It's the first time I'll be speaking. I'm not sure exactly which day I'm speaking on, but my topic is called Tetris versus Pac-Man. Is the reading in the dots or the blocks? Funny name, a bit of a fun presentation. I hope you can get along to it. If you haven't booked your tickets, then you probably better get onto that pronto. And I'm sure you can find that out online at the MTNA website. I'm really looking forward to catching up with you, lots of you then. And I know many of you will be going. And make sure you also check out when we'll be meeting for some drinks. That's what I always like to do when I'm over in these events for my podcast listeners and members and people who read the blog. If you haven't already found out about those, the times that we're meeting, then check out timtopham.com/meetup for more information. And I'm very happy to announce as well that next week on Tuesday the 13th, we will also be celebrating the second birthday of my Inner Circle piano teaching community. So we'll be having a number of events that week. Stay tuned on social. And for those of you who are members, we'll be making sure we have a little bit of a celebration in our monthly mastermind. So if you're interested in finding out more about membership and the rapidly growing community we're building there and course library, of course, then head to timtopham.com/community. Now, next week, we're starting a three-part series on motivation with the one and only Samantha Coates from Sydney, as I mentioned a little bit earlier. If any of you have seen Samantha present at conferences, and I think her NCKP talk last year on mnemonics was literally one of the all-time best presentations I've ever seen, then you'll know that Sam is the real deal and is not only incredibly engaging, but has such great ideas that literally any teacher can implement. In this three-part series starting next week, we're going to answer all your questions about motivation, why students don't practice, how to deal with overscheduled kids, how to motivate the parents, often a forgotten element in student motivation, and how to set goals that will motivate by ensuring you understand the three basic needs of every piano student. What are they? Well, you'll find out really, really soon. I think releasing this three-part series is going to make a huge impact on your thinking around motivation, and you'll hear me having a number of aha moments during the interviews as it really got me thinking. So I can't wait to share it with you all next week. And remember, of course, that you can easily listen to this podcast on your iPhone or your Google phone or Android by downloading my app. Just go to either the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, and search for Tim Topham. You'll be able to find it, download it, and you can find all my videos, my blog posts, and podcasts there and get notifications when new things are released. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
That will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.